Hello and welcome to In Conversation. My guest today is Don Lowe, a former pastor, administrator within the Seventh-day Adventist Church. But now, Don, you really enjoying retirement.
I am indeed, yes.
We're going to come back to your retirement because you've developed quite an interesting hobby of violin making that we want to talk about. But I'd like to take you back, first of all, right to your roots in Derby in the north of England. Very working class background.
Very working class. All of the houses really were built around the very large factories, including Rolls-Royce.
So these were rows and rows of terrace houses?
A little bit later than that. No, we had gardens and so on, and pavements probably 2 metres wide that were filled with workmen every morning and every lunchtime and every evening, going to work and coming home.
So was this the kind of picture that you get from the archives where you'd hear the siren on the factory and that was the time when all the men left the house and went to work?
That's right.
Yes.
They called it the bull. It was a big, loud noise that woke everybody up at the right time to be in work on time.
And they got there. But it was a very, very basic kind of upbringing you had. You weren't over-endowed with too many toys or clothes or...
No. It was a very simple... Everybody, compared with today's Britain, would be very poor, apart from the very few.
And what did that mean for your life? I mean, what was life like in your family?
To be honest, I really enjoyed it. I didn't realise the problems that my parents had. But, of course, I had one set of clothing for church and one set of clothing for school. We had one wardrobe and all of the clothes of all of the family. There were six of us fitted into that wardrobe.
Very, very different to today.
Yes. No central heating, of course. Just one fire in the house.
How did your parents get by? Because your dad worked in the factory.
My dad... He was an iron moulder in Rolls-Royce. In those days, the mothers didn't generally go out to work. They had enough to do looking after the children and the home.
And yet the difficulty came for your mother, of course, when you were about 11 and your dad died.
Yes. My mother was only 37 at the time, and she had four children. And she had to go into a little shop at the corner of the road, baking cakes to keep us in food and clothing.
And how did that work for the four of you, you and your three sisters? Did that make life more difficult for you?
Again, we were a very happy family, and we were happy with what we had. We didn't really know anything else.
Mm. Except for the fact that you saw the contrast, because you used to go to church, and there in church there were a number of families like yourself from that working-class background, and you were also in the midst of lawyers and professional people, and you must have noticed the difference.
You see, the people from working-class backgrounds didn't dress much differently from the other people. And the one thing that I did experience as a little boy was the real love and kindness of all these lovely people. I didn't notice the difference.
So church was actually kind of the focal centre of your life at that time, was it?
It really was. My friends were there. As boys, we grew up together. And it was the place that we went every week and found real joy and pleasure, and met all these lovely people who loved us.
So it was very positive for you?
Yeah, very positive.
How about your friends at school? Because the Seventh-day Adventist Church in Derby was just in its formation back then in the 20s. It was a small church, 35 members. Very few of them presumably came from the large estate that you lived on. Was there a tension or a clash between your church life and the rest of the week?
Not really. We used to play in the street outside together. There weren't any cars around, so it was safe. I didn't play football on the Sabbath. That was probably the only difference.
That was your compromise, yes.
That was my, yes.
Now, school, that wasn't your favourite place.
No, I found school a problem. I was a very nervous child. I, even at church where my sisters used to stand up and recite poetry, I was too nervous ever to stand up and do anything.
And so you ended up, rather than on the academic side, you know, spellings and writing was not your great thing, but you found that you were quite artistic.
Yes, eventually I qualified to spend time at the art school there, and I found that a much more pleasurable place to be.
You've always enjoyed that creative side.
I have, yeah.
So logically from that, coming from this, you know, the factory gates in a sense, the logic would be that you would finish at art school at age 14 or 15 and be straight back through those factory gates. Is that what happened with you?
Of course, my father had died by then, and one would have thought that I should really have gone to work to earn for the family. But I was encouraged to go to our ministerial college at that time.
You say encouraged, it was a little bit stronger than that, wasn't it?
Well, these wonderful people at the church, right from being a little boy, they used to pat me on the head and say, "Donald, you're going to be a minister." But, you know, it's something that didn't really enter my head at the time, of course. But I did have opportunity of very well-paid work at Rolls-Royce.
Yeah, you could have become a draftsman with your artistic skills,
yes,
and the eye for detail. But in fact, the church elder in the Derby church said to you, "Donald, you're going to Newbold, pack
That's
your
right.
bags and off you go."
That's exactly how I went.
At age 15 and a half.
That's right.
That must have been quite traumatic, leaving your mother and your three sisters and being in a totally different, strange environment.
It was very exciting because where I'd lived in the middle of factories, I suddenly arrived in a very stately home in a big estate that was like paradise to me. And there were boys of my own age there, so it was a wonderful experience.
But you went there with kind of 2.5p in your pockets.
That's right.
How on earth did you get through with no finances?
I worked 60 hours a week there and earned 2.5p an hour. And that's how I got through the summer.
So for those of my children that may be watching, it's not a problem to work hard and get a living.
No, and it was a very happy experience.
Now, that in a sense was interrupted because we move into the time of the Second World War and conscription, and you hit the age of 18.
That's right.
Also belonging to a church that didn't believe in competency at that time. What happened to you then?
Then I had to go to a tribunal and explain my religious views and told them that I didn't believe in any form of killing. And so I was exempted from military service, and I could choose to work in a hospital in agriculture or down in a coal mine. I chose to work in a hospital and became an orderly in the operating theatre.
Was that also a time where maybe your faith got challenged? Because, again, when you look back in the history books, a lot of fun was made or scorn was poured on people that were conscientious objectors. You should be out fighting for your country.
The interesting thing is that our hospital took care of many of the wounded people from the war, especially those with burns. And so I met and helped many of these young men who were coming back from the fighting. And they had great sympathy for our point of view, mm-hmm. because they, unfortunately, were being asked to kill young men of their own age simply for political reasons. So the opposition didn't really come from the soldiers. It did come from other people, and I can understand how they felt at the time.
And yet it's a difficult situation in a sense, isn't it? Because many people would look back and see the evils of the Nazi regime and say, well, if people hadn't gone and fought and died, then where would we be today?
Yes, it was a very difficult experience.
But you came through it, you came out the other side, and in 1951, was it, you actually had been able to return to college and study and graduate?
Yes.
And that's when you could then go into your calling, your ministry.
And it was during those intervening years that I really became a Christian.
What do you mean by that? Because surely you're going to train for ministry. You should be a Christian when you go there.
That is true. But you see, with the background, all of those things were taken for granted. And as I was in this situation of seeing war and mixing with people of different faiths and no faith, I did have to really think and struggled eventually. And eventually I became a Christian from my own choice, totally from my own choice, nothing to do with my background, well, nothing to do with my background in a sense, but it was my own choice.
Was there a catalyst or something that actually brought you to that choice?
There was. There was a time when I saw these poor men coming, and I thought to myself, I think that I should change my view and join the armed forces. There were two other gentlemen working in the operating theatre with me at the time who were conscientious objectors, and they were older than myself. And one was a Baptist from the Baptist Church, one was from the Anglican Church, and they took me aside and told me of the love of Jesus Christ, and that I should think very seriously before I changed. And they actually led me carefully and gently really into a Christian faith of my own.
Through the influence of these two orderlies, given yourself to Christ, in a sense for the first time, you'd grown up as a Christian, as an Adventist, but it still left you with some tensions in your life, didn't it? Because you were there in the middle of the war, things were happening, life was difficult. There were great temptations to go other directions.
Do you know, looking back, I find it quite interesting. I was baptised in a Baptist church when I was 15 because my cousins and friends were. And I became a Christian when I was 19 or 20. Because, of course, I believed in all the things that made me choose to be a conscientious objector. But as time went on and our hospital was looking after many of the wounded soldiers from the war, many questions came into my mind. And is Christianity the right thing? And finally, I was forced to the conclusion with my own thinking and the wonder of wonderful people around me that the Christian way was the best, and in this way I could help these poor men.
And God seemed to be looking over your shoulder and kind of pushing you in a direction, even in your lifestyle, which had moved away from perhaps what traditional Adventist standards were related to. God seemed to be challenging you.
I remember one day standing in the hospital there, queue at breakfast time, along with all the other men. My lifestyle as an Adventist was rather strict with what I ate, and a gentleman came along who was new to the place and asked me, what do they have for breakfast? It seemed simple enough. And when I told him, oh, he said, I said, yes, but I don't happen to eat bacon. He said, oh, neither do I. And I found that he was actually an Adventist from our church. And I was really angry with God for sending one of them into that place to kind of steer me back in a way. But it was the whole thing, these other wonderful Christian gentlemen.
That had the influence on you.
Yes.
Now, of course, we get you back to Newbold. You graduate. You then start in Oldbury in the Black Country.
Yes.
in the Midlands.
Yes.
As a minister.
Yes.
What was it like once you were the other side of the fence and suddenly, you know, you're in there and running outreach programs and all sorts of things?
I was assisting an evangelist in the town hall in Oldbury. And it was interesting. In those days, people would come out to evangelistic meetings. But then I began to visit people and to find often the difficult situations in which many people were still living in the early 1950s, and finding how that Jesus Christ could lift some of these poor people out of the rather miserable existence that they had. And I found there was a real joy in bringing happiness to people right there in that in that town, where there were more than, I think, 40 foundries surrounding it.
And from there you then moved up to Leeds. Did you find a similar experience there? Large campaign meetings, 2,000 people coming to them.
Yes, it was quite a wonderful experience to be there and to assist in the evangelistic work that was being done.
Now, from there, that's around the time as well that you met a young lady by the name of Catherine.
Kathleen, yes. And that was a wonderful experience. She had just actually returned from missionary work in Ghana. It was called the Gold Coast at the time. And we met at a church Christmas party. And became very good friends and loved one another and married.
And have been very good friends ever since.
Absolutely. That was in 1954.
Is that maybe where your passion came from, to actually go out to West Africa, to Sierra Leone yourself a few years later?
No. By this time I was the minister in our church in Wolverhampton. And a gentleman from our headquarters came to the church and asked me how I'd feel about going to work in Sierra Leone. I told him that I was not terribly impressed because there were more than 1 million people in my parish that I could never reach.
And yet somehow you succumbed to the call and you went out there with your young family.
Well, my wife and I both felt that we would do what the leaders asked us to do, whether we liked it or not. And in every instance I found that when I followed, I was more blessed than I ever expected to be.
So what was the joy, what was the satisfaction in Sierra Leone?
I suppose it was seeing one of the things that impressed me was the lifestyle of the majority of poor people there, and how, even though I had thought myself rather poor in England, when I arrived in Freetown in Sierra Leone, I realised that the poor people in Britain are rich people in the world. And as I saw the needs of these wonderful people, and so many of them were just lovely, generous, gentle, Christian ladies and gentlemen. Some of the very best pastors that I ever worked with were African pastors in Sierra Leone. They were wonderful people who gave me great guidance and support and help. So it was a tremendous blessing. It was like reading people as an open book. That was one of the best experiences in my life.
Now, we need to bring you back to England, well, to Ireland in a sense, because you came back and very shortly after that you were invited to be the president, the leader of the church in Ireland, and then followed that with North England and South England.
Yeah.
And again, wearing a totally different hat, suddenly in administration, looking after the other pastors and the church members. What was that experience like, being the other side of the desk?
Well, I never felt the other side of the desk, to be honest, because I always felt that I was one of my team of ministers. In Ireland, it was a wonderful experience, lovely people, both sides of the border, and a lovely team of ministers that I was privileged to work with.
A little more difficult in the North and the South conferences?
Very different. Big challenges and big joys. I always really appreciated the graciousness of the ministry and the members of the church through all the difficult periods that in which I worked.
Now, you moved on from there, and I want to get to something in the story we mentioned right at the beginning.
Oh,
you moved on from there to work in larger fields in terms of church administration, but you actually finished your ministry by asking to go back to a local church.
Yes.
And enjoyed that. And then on retirement, which was a few years past normal retiring age, you were obviously enjoying it so much, you eventually had the chance to go back to your artistic skills and take up a new hobby.
That is true. I decided I'd like to learn to play the violin, and I had a violin that a friend at church and at college, name is Amott Millward, and he's in the States. He gave me a violin, and unfortunately it was cracked badly. So from year to year, as I moved in my ministry, I took this violin around thinking to repair it one day. And some kind of 55 years later, I set about it. But I found that there was a school in Cambridge that taught violin making. And I decided to go to that school. This was a wonderful experience, and I still go. In term time, I have the privilege of working with some 18 or 20 other people who are interested in making violins and making wonderful instruments for people to play. It was another side of my ministry, and because I met so many people of different professions. And enjoyed the experience of their lives. And I've now completed five violins, and the last one is for my music teacher, who is playing it at the English National Opera.
Oh, that is absolutely wonderful. And you said that it's also expanded your ministry a little bit, because you don't go to this group, this class, announcing that I am a Adventist minister or that you're a clergyman at all, and yet somehow people are discovering something about faith through you.
Yes, I have never told them of my profession, except one of my friends there who enjoys fishing as I do. And we went out together one day, and he took me home, and we were talking about our professions, well, his profession. Then he turned to me and said, "Don, what have you done?" And I said, "Well, I've been a minister." "Oh, My goodness, had I have known that, you wouldn't have been sitting here with me. And I think that, you know, Westboro spread around, and I have been able to help a number of people in difficult circumstances who have come and asked for help. And I remember on one occasion when announcement had to be made in the workshop where 20 of us were working, and people couldn't hear, and someone shouted, "Ask Don, he'll be heard." So they must have known that I was a minister.
And they believe you're heard in another way as well, because they keep coming to you with their prayer requests.
Well, this is true. I found that as I was talking during the coffee interval with people, and they were telling me about their children and some of the problems, and I said on numerous occasions, "Would you like me to say, remember you in my prayers?" "Oh, I'd love that, Don." And so I've always done that. And the people, one way or another, have found great comfort in the fact that someone loves them enough to remember them and their children in their prayers.
And that comfort still gives you satisfaction now with your role, with your kind of ministry in retirement?
Yes, yes. Of course, I still preach and do pastoral work in the church and in my neighbourhood. They all know that I'm a minister in my neighbourhood.
And life is good?
Life is very good.
Don, thank you so much for sharing your long and varied story with us.
Yes. It's been a real pleasure to be with you.
God bless you.
Thank you.